this morning. And so our main passage, or one of the main passages, is going to come from Deuteronomy chapter 7 here in just a moment. There's the concept for Christians that we are to be separate. Come out and be separate from the world. And it's a little bit different than it was in the Old Testament. So we understand that Israel was a physical nation, that Israel was literally and physically to be separate from the world around them. For Christians, it's a little bit different because we're not a physical kingdom. We're a spiritual kingdom. And so we must still maintain our time amongst the people of the world. Our goals are different. We are to seek to convert people to Christ. And a lot of that requires that we actually be in the world and that we interact with people in the world. And our jobs and our schools and so on and so forth requires that we be among the people of the world. Paul makes that point. We'll get to that in a few moments in 1 Corinthians chapter 5. He talks about how we have to be part of the world. We can't just go out of the world. So our goals have changed, you know, from what the goals of the Israelites were. But there are still some principles that we will talk about from the Old Testament. I'm sure that I have used this example probably here. If I haven't, then it'll be new to you. If you've heard it before, please just bear with me. I heard about a man one time that worked for, I believe it was a big natural gas company, and his job required him to travel frequently. And the company would relocate him every few months to a different area for his job to do the things he had to do. And sometimes, his travels would cause him to be in a single remote or wild area for months at a time. And other times he would be in more populated areas, you know, the larger cities, things like that. Well, he had been located with a group of Christians for a while, and they'd become close to him over those few months. And then his job said that he was going to go to an area, a remote area in another state, that was known for wickedness. You know, everybody in the area knew that it was just full of wickedness, no sound churches there, a lot of wicked people, a lot of disgusting activities went on. And of course the Christians were very concerned about him and advised him, you know, don't go there, find a way not to have to go into this predicament. But that's where his job wanted him to go. And so he went. And he was gone for a few months, and then his job relocated him back in amongst that group of Christians. And they said, well, how did things go? You know, how are you doing spiritually? He said, you know, how did you fare spiritually while you were up there? And he says, oh, I did fine. They never even knew I was a Christian. You know, that's kind of a scary thought, though, isn't it? You know, that you have somebody that, well, they don't even know I'm a Christian because they blend so well. The temptations for Christians is to blend with the world rather than being separate and apart from them. And a lot of times Christians misuse Paul's statement about being everything to everyone as justification for that that sentiment, even though that's not what Paul is saying at all. But we try to be as close to the world as we can possibly be, because if we show that we're just like them, then the world will really be convinced that we're right, won't they? Well, there's a problem with that. Should we blend with the world, or should we be separate? Deuteronomy chapter 7. We're going to read the first 11 verses of this chapter. When the Lord your God brings you into the land which you go to possess and cast out many nations before you, the Hittites and the Girgashites and the Amorites and the Canaanites and the Perizzites and the Hivites and the Jebusites, seven nations greater and mightier than you. And when the Lord your God delivers them over to you, you shall conquer them and utterly destroy them. You shall make no covenant with them, nor show mercy to them. You shall not make marriages with them. You shall not give your daughter to their son, nor take their daughter for your son. For they will turn your sons away from following me and serve other gods. So the anger of the Lord will be aroused against you and destroy you suddenly. But thus you shall deal with them. You shall destroy their altars and break down their sacred pillars and cut down their wooden images and burn their carved images with fire. For you are a holy people to the Lord your God. The Lord your God has chosen you to be a people for himself, a special treasure above all the peoples on the face of the earth. The Lord did not send his love on you nor choose you because you were more in number than any other people, for you were the least of all peoples. But because the Lord loves you, and because He would keep the oath which He swore to your fathers, the Lord has brought you out with a mighty hand and redeemed you from the house of bondage, from the hand of Pharaoh, the king of Egypt. Therefore, know that the Lord your God, He is God, the faithful God who keeps covenant and mercy for 1,000 generations with those who love Him and keep His commandments. And He repays those who hate Him to their face to destroy them. He will not be slack with him who hates him. He will repay him to his face. Therefore, you shall keep the commandments, the statutes, and the judgments which I command you today to observe them. And think about what is being said here. You know, obviously we're talking about the physical nation of Israel here. So there's some things that, even in principle, we can't really apply because, you know, we're not physically destroying anyone. That being said, there is a spiritual application that we can make. Note that even for the Israelites, and we understand that they were a fairly large nation, that there were a great many blessings that came with that, they were still not the mightiest of nations. They weren't the most in number. In fact, there's a whole list of nations that are listed in verse 1 there. And it says, seven nations greater and mightier than you. Well, if we think about that and we apply that to Christians today, it's essentially the same thing, isn't it? You know, we're not the religion in the world that has the most people. We aren't greater in number than the world that surrounds us. There's a spiritual application to be made there. And yet, God then goes in to talk about how He will deliver these seven nations into the hand of the Israelites because God is that powerful. Well, God takes care of us in many ways as well. And He tells them in chapter 7 here, don't make covenant with them. Don't intermarry with them. The essential idea is to come out and to be separate from those nations. Why? Why should Christians today be like the Israelites in that instance? He says, for they will turn your sons away from following me to serve other gods. So the anger of the Lord will be aroused against you and destroy you suddenly. You know, there's that principle that is there. Should we blend with the world? Should we allow the world into us? And the answer to that is just simply no, because those things will draw us away from God. So while we are not a physical nation that can always be physically separated from the world, we are to be separated spiritually. We are to make sure that we separate ourselves to God. Turn to chapter 26 of Deuteronomy. I like these couple of passages from Deuteronomy because the truth is you can get so much from them. And we're just really covering a surface level of them in our lesson today. But there's a couple of things that we need to keep in mind. So Deuteronomy 26, we're going to begin in verse 16. This day the Lord your God commands you to observe these statutes and judgments. Therefore you shall be careful to observe them with all your heart and with all your soul. Today you have proclaimed the Lord to be your God, and that you will walk in His ways and keep His statutes, His commandments, and His judgments, and that you will obey His voice. Also today the Lord has proclaimed you to be His special people, just as He promised you that you would keep all His that you should keep all His commandments, and that He will set you high above all nations, which He has made in praise and name and honor, that you may be a holy people to the Lord your God, just as He has spoken. Do you see some similarities again between the Israelite people being a chosen people of God and the people of God today as Christians? Do we not do the same things? Now, obviously, we don't keep the old law. There is a difference in what God commanded the Israelites and what God commands us. But do we not do the exact same things, or should we not do the exact same things? Are we not to keep His commandments, His statutes, keep His way, walk in His way, and do the things that God has commanded for us to do? there's that condition about being the special people of God. We've been talking about this in our Jeremiah study, how they kept crying, the people of Judah kept crying out against God and claiming that God was not holding up His promises. And the problem with that is that there was a covenant between God and the people. And there's two parts to that covenant. If they obeyed God, if they did what God told them to do, then God would give them the benefits of being His special people. They would have the land of promise. The throne of David would last forever, and so on and so forth. They would be that physical kingdom. But the other part of that is that if they didn't keep up their end of the covenant, if they didn't obey God, then there were consequences for that. So God would punish them. And the truth is, God was probably a lot more lenient with the people of Israel, the people of Judah, than a human would ever be with them. He put up with so much out of the people of Judah. And finally, by the time we get to the time of Jeremiah, God says, that's enough. I'm not going to allow this to happen any longer. And so He brings about that second part of His promise, the consequences. Well, we are much the same way. We have that covenant with God. We make the same promise to God when we become a Christian that we will do as He commands, that we will separate ourselves from the world, and that we will be His children, that we will be His special people. We should have the attitude that is portrayed in Deuteronomy 26 and in Deuteronomy chapter 7. Now, I understand, as I said, and I want to make it, I'm trying to make that clear. You know, we're not trying to keep the Old Testament law. But the principles are still there. The idea of coming out and being separate from the world. Christians are to be separate from the world. Different way. You know, there are things we still have to do to survive and to deal or to live in this world. But we need to be separate. Turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 5. As I said, Paul deals with this concept. I think that Christians in the first century had the same tendency that Christians today have, where we kind of bounce from one extreme to the other. You know, something comes across on the left side, and we don't like that, and we realize that we're not supposed to do that. And so sometimes we go too far to the right side, and we go to the far extreme on the other side. It's almost as though Paul knew that they would do such things. Because Paul deals with, in the first half of the chapter, putting out the sinner from among the Christians there. And not keeping company with that sinner. And then, it's as I'm saying, it's just as though he knew what their next step would be. Well, then we can't keep company, we can't interact with any sinners at all. And so Paul makes that point. He says, okay, we'll just go ahead and nip this one in the bud, and we'll deal with it right up front. Verse 9, he says, I wrote to you in my epistle not to keep company with sexually immoral people, yet I certainly did not mean with the sexually immoral people of this world, or with the covetous, or extortioners, or idolaters, since you would need to go out of the world. But now I have written to you not to keep company with anyone named a brother who is sexually immoral, or covetous, or an idolater, or a reviler, or a drunkard, or an extortioner, not even to eat with such a person. For what have I to do with judging those who are outside? Do you not judge those who are inside? But those who are outside, God judges. Therefore, put away from yourselves the evil person. And so, Paul is dealing with that idea right up front. Okay, you still have to live in the world. You know, I don't believe that Paul is suggesting to the Corinthian brethren, okay, go make the world your best friends and blend with them. In fact, the idea is completely separate here of blending. You are to be different. You know, that person that is named, you know, with these sins within the church needs to be dealt with. But you can't go out of the world itself. We're not a physical kingdom to be separate in that way. But we are separate spiritually. We are to live our lives in a way that is dramatically different than the world. We are to be separate from the sin of the world. Turn to 2 Corinthians chapter 6. You know, sometimes we try to get so close to sin, so close to the world. We try to get as close as we can without falling in, you might say. You know, how can we walk the fence? How can we get to the edge? And is that okay? 2 Corinthians chapter 6, beginning in verse 14. And we'll read down to the end of the chapter there. Do not be unequally yoked together with unbelievers, for what fellowship has righteousness with lawlessness, and what communion has light with darkness? And what accord has Christ with Belial? For what or what part has a believer with an unbeliever? And what agreement has the God or the temple of God with idols? For you are the temple of the living God, as God has said, I will dwell in them and walk among them. I will be their God, and they shall be my people. Therefore, come out from among them and be separate, says the Lord. Do not touch what is unclean, and I will receive you. I will be a father to you, and you shall be my sons and daughters, says the Lord Almighty. And so here's that concept of that while we have to live in the world, we are still spiritually separated from the world. We don't see how close we can get to the world. We see how close we can get to God. I like this concept, you know, do not touch what is unclean. You know, don't touch the sin or see as close, how close we can get to the sin without, you know, falling in, so to speak. It's 1 Thessalonians chapter 5. Verses 21 and 22. Test all things, hold fast what is good, abstain from every form of evil. And I like this concept that is here. You know, test it. What is actually good? Hold fast to what is good. And abstain from every form of evil. There is, in the nature of these verses, the concept of being separate from the world. Don't try to get as close to sin. Come out and be separate. The temptation for Christians is to avoid doing anything that will show that separation. Now, if we refuse to dress immodestly, we show a distinction. The world recognizes when we refuse to be immodest. If we refuse to go out drinking, we show that distinction. Well, you're weird. Why don't you go out and drink? You know, I used to work in retail, and you know, after work on a Friday night, all the guys would get together and go out to the bar that was right over the hill. For a while, they asked me if I wanted to go, and I told them, no, I don't drink. I have no interest in doing that. Well, that's just weird. You don't drink? You've never taken a drink in your life? You're weird. Well, then I suppose that I'm weird. But I'm not going to do that. After a while, they stopped asking me to go to such things because they knew I was going to say no. If young unmarried Christians refrain from physical relationships, they show a distinction. I was watching a show the other night where one of the characters in the show made a comment about how the only woman he'd ever been with was his wife. And everybody else in the show just acted like, oh, that's just weird. There's something wrong with you. That's not normal. Well, if Christians do that sort of thing, if they're careful about those things, we show a distinction amongst us and the world, or between us and the world. And in each of these examples, and there's many more we could use, Christians are often mocked because they don't participate. Well, then we're going to be mocked. It doesn't really matter in the grand scheme of things. The world's reaction. Think about the world's reaction for just a few moments here. Too often we hear of Christians, and maybe I should use air quotes, you know, we hear of Christians in the world that are extremely popular. They get along with everybody, and you know, you have even people that aren't Christians just praising them to the highest places because You know, they're just such great people. There are many well-known evangelists that have hundreds of thousands, maybe millions of followers in this world. Let me tell you, every now and then I'll get on like Joel Osteen's Facebook page just to see how many followers that he has. And I'm never going to be that popular, and the truth is I'm okay with that. But there'll be millions of people following him and sharing his motivational statuses and, oh, he's such a wonderful person. And there's many others like him, you know, Francis Chan, Mark Driscoll, and so many others. What do they say? Why are they popular? You know, I jokingly say I'll never be as popular as those guys are, and I'm okay with that, because I hope that what I teach is actually the truth, that there's something of depth to what I say, which by nature is going to say that I'm never going to be as popular as they are. And that's okay. People need to hear the truth. They don't need to hear that they're okay where they are, because that means nothing in the afterlife. It means nothing good for them. They teach very little of what the world would be turned off by. They teach a very feel-good gospel. The truth is, it kind of raises my blood pressure if I read through just a few of Joel Osteen's statuses, because they're all motivational and talking about how God wants you to be rich. That's what a lot of them come down to. If you really believe and love God, then you're going to have lots of money. God's going to make sure that you prosper financially. The Bible teaches nothing about that. You know, we may be very blessed in that way. I know some Christians that are very, very blessed financially, and they do what they're supposed to do with it. They help other people, other Christians. They do a lot with it because they recognize that God has blessed them. But God does not make the promise to us that we'll be physically rich. And it doesn't matter. But that's what makes a lot of the world happy with them. That's what the world looks for. But what does the Bible depict about Christians? Turn to John chapter 15. John chapter 15, and we're going to begin in verse 18 here. If we are popular, are we fulfilling what the Bible really depicts about how the world will see us? If the world hates you, you know that it hated me before it hated you. Excuse me. If you were of the world would love its own. Yet because you are not of the world, but I chose you out of the world, therefore the world hates you. Remember the word that I said to you, a servant is not greater than his master. If they persecuted me, they will also persecute you. If they kept my word, they will keep yours also. But all these things they say, they will do to you for my name's sake, because they do not know him who sent me. If I had not come and spoken to them, they would have no sin. But now they have no excuse for their sin. He who hates me hates my Father also. If I had not done among them the works which no one else did, they would have no sin. But now they have seen and also hated both me and my Father. But this happened that the word might be fulfilled, which was written in their law, they hated me without cause. And if we stop and we think about how the world treats Christians who use the scriptures appropriately, and they try to convince people about the truth of the gospel, a lot of people will say, well, I love God, but what you're saying isn't my God. You know, my God would never condemn anyone. And so, therefore, you're just wrong. And it doesn't matter how many times you use the scriptures. A lot of people will say things such as that. What Jesus says here is that we're not greater than him. They'll treat us just like the world treated Jesus at that time. And these people do not love God. When they treat us that way, they're rejecting God through his message. They're not just rejecting us. This is how the world will treat us. Does that mean that we should stop? Does that mean that we shouldn't do what we are supposed to do? Well, if we're in the same company as Jesus and the apostles, then it seems like that's pretty good company to be in. That doesn't mean that we want the world to reject us. We want them to accept the gospel. But the reality is that the majority of the world is going to reject it. I know we have a tendency to look at, you know, what happened in the first century, and we have examples, you know, where 3,000 or 5,000 obeyed. And we sometimes forget that, you know, the gospel's new at that point, and even that 3,000 and that 5,000 were still a small part of the overall population of the city. We have to keep that in mind. Keep things in the proper perspective. Because the truth is, the majority of the people rejected what Jesus said. They rejected what the apostles said. Jesus says, well, if they hated me, they're going to hate you too. Or if they hate you, they already hated me. That's what the world will do to those who teach the gospel. Turn to 1 Peter chapter 4. In regard to these, they think it strange that you do not run with them in the same flood of dissipation, speaking evil of you. They think it's strange. I think that is a wonderful phrase in the Bible. You know, it sticks out to me because that's how people in the world view what we do as Christians. And in a lot of cases, it's rather interesting that, you know, I have some friends that are not Christians. And, you know, you can write them off and say, well, you know, they're not Christians. Some of them claim to be atheist or agnostic. And the interesting thing is that I've been friends with them for a very long time. And every now and then we get into biblical discussions. They think I'm strange because I don't do those things, but that strangeness in some people actually intrigues them. And it causes them to question or to start thinking about what makes you different. If we try to blend with the world, then what's going to make anybody want to change? What's going to be a motivating factor for them? Well, if you're the same as me, then why do I need to do anything? There needs to be that separation. And some of the world's just going to say, well, okay, you're strange and I don't want to be anything like you. I want you to leave me alone because you're strange. Some people might do the opposite and say, well, what makes that distinction? Why are you different? Why is there that distinction? It may turn into something, it may not. See, the idea that Jesus depicts in John chapter 15 isn't that the entire world is going to reject us. The entire world is going to hate us. There were still going to be those that did what Jesus said, just as they will do when we teach the message. They will still do what Jesus says. So the unfortunate temptation is for Christians to fit in, or at least not draw attention to how we are different. How close can we get? Can we get as close in dress and behavior and actions and whatever else to the world so that they won't recognize that there is that distinction? Well, yeah, they never even knew I was a Christian. How often do we think in those terms? And that's a temptation and it is a danger to us. And it's something we have to keep in mind and be conscious of. Am I doing this because I want to blend in? Or am I trying to show that distinction? During judgment, there will be a separation, one way or the other. And our choice is now. Turn to Matthew chapter 13. Matthew 13, we'll read verses 47 to 50 here in just a moment. You know, there's going to be a separation. During the day of judgment, there will be a separation. And the question is, you know, do we want to separate ourselves to God now or to be separated from God during that day. In verse 47 it says, again, the kingdom of heaven is like a dragnet that was cast into the sea and gathered some of every kind, which when it was full they drew to shore, and they sat down and gathered the good into vessels and threw the bad away. And so it will be at the end of the age. The angels will come forth, separate the wicked from among the just, and will cast them into the furnace of fire, where there will be weeping, or will be wailing and gnashing of teeth. You know, our choice is now. You know, we can make the choice to be separated to God and to be found among those faithful. We want to be collected. We don't want to be cast away. Well, let's wind down. A couple of weeks ago, I used the example of Joshua in Joshua 24 and 15. He says, you know, as for me and my house, I will serve the Lord. And the application was fitting then, and I think it's fitting for the end of a sermon such as this, where, you know, don't mistakenly think that Joshua just got up one morning and said, okay, well, this is what we're going to do from here on out. Joshua was making the declaration that he had always done that with his family and that he would continue to do that with his family. This wasn't the first time that he had made that declaration. That is something we have to keep in mind. Something we have to, that decision we have to make every single day. Chris and I have been talking at different times about the concept of authority in the Bible and the idea that, you know, we don't have to read through the commands of God and decide every single time that we're going to, you know, am I going to do what God tells me to do, or am I not going to do what God tells me to do? When we become a Christian, we've made that decision that whatever God tells us to do, we're going to do it. And that's what the authority of God comes down to. And that's what it takes to be faithful to God. And you go back and you think about, you know, Deuteronomy 7 and Deuteronomy 26, that concept of this is what God has told me to do, trusting in God. Sometimes we see the reasoning. Sometimes we just have to trust that God knows what is best for us. And that's what we have. You know, we have a little bit of both of that in Deuteronomy. In Deuteronomy 7, God says, you know, you shouldn't be a part of the world around you. And this is the reason why, because they will draw you away from me. Sometimes we just have to trust that God knows what is best for us. And whatever God tells us to do, that's what we are to do. I hope these things are beneficial to you this morning. Just a few thoughts and a reminder that we are to be separate from the world around us. It's not always easy. In fact, more often than not, it's actually rather difficult to be separate. But in the end, it's actually well worth our time and our effort to do that.